How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team. Every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days. Jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. Especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Here for you Monday through Friday. So thank you for making us part of your daily routine, even on a day like this, where the Celtics once again give up a huge, huge run and fall to the Washington Wizards. The series is now evened up, two games apiece, heading back to Boston. Here to talk with me, John Corrales, is him, Sam Jam Packard, with the Rain and Jays. And let's just dive into this. Have you ever seen a team, Sam, give up leads like this, give up runs, huge runs, a 16-0, a 14-0, a 22-0, and a 26-0 run in the first four games of a series?
I've never seen anything like it in my life, and I feel like the worst part is I thought we were out of it. I thought after the first quarter where the Celtics actually had a lead, I thought there was a chance that the runs were no more. And then to start the third quarter after the big dog comes in and gives you 5 points, five unexpected points. He hits a three. The big dog hits a three. It should have been one of the most glorious moments on Celtics Twitter. But no, immediately, 26 in a row. It's just awful. I mean, the Wizards are a really good team in transition. John Wall's just an amazing, the fastest player I've ever seen. He's an amazing passer. So to give up a bunch of just live ball turnovers like that, like it's not surprising given the way the Celtics played at the start of that first quarter. But to see the like runs like this in four consecutive games, it's absurd. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, 9 turnovers for the Boston Celtics in the third quarter, 21 points off of turnovers for the Washington Wizards. Isaiah Thomas had 5 of them. He just dribbling the ball off his foot, just crazy, unbelievable turnovers. Somehow Marcus Smart only had 1 official turnover in that. I don't believe that at all. I don't believe that at all, because Marcus Smart ended up only 2 turnovers in the game. There's no way that that's accurate. I don't – somehow those got credited to somebody else, and that doesn't make any sense. But Isaiah had 6 turnovers for the game, 5 in that third quarter, and they all came, I think, in that stretch where just everything was going wrong. And it's hard to believe because, like you said, Amir Johnson comes in. Everybody's going nuts. Like, what's Amir Johnson still doing in this game? Why is he starting the third quarter? Brad, what are you doing? And then he comes in, hits a bucket, blocks a shot, hits a three, instant 5-0 run by himself. And that happened at the 11:10 mark, the three. The next Celtics basket was the 5-minute mark out of a timeout and a play drawn up for Al Horford. In between, it went from 53-48 Celtics to 74-53 Washington. I don't even know how that's possible. I can't. I'm saying the numbers, and I just can't really fathom what happened. But when you look at that stretch, And it's interesting because Mark D'Amico tweeted out that he said he was afraid that the Celtics were going to be so focused on the first quarter that they weren't going to play well for the rest of the game. They weren't focused on playing well for the rest of the game. And I was a little surprised by that, but they came out in that first quarter. Isaiah Thomas was smoking hot. I mean, just as hot as a player I've ever seen. And then they gave up a little run to close out the second quarter, end up going into halftime tied, and then it all fell apart in the third. And you just wonder if there's some merit to that. If the Celtics were just so focused on coming out well to start that when they came out in that third quarter, they're like, all right, it's a little too loose. They went into halftime like, okay, good. Phew, we did it. And there's still two more quarters to play.
I'm not sure I buy into that as much because the offense wasn't great in the second quarter. In the final 7.5 minutes of the second quarter, they only scored 8 points. It felt like I'm not exactly sure what the Wizards were doing defensively, but they're giving Isaiah Thomas a lot of attention. They were doing a lot of John Wall was doing a great job of kind of creeping up from the weak side. So when Isaiah Thomas was going to make the pass out of the pick and roll, kind of going and forcing the issue there. And it just felt like the Celtics didn't really have an offensive game plan. I mean, it shouldn't have been as bad as just kind of the 26 points in a row, but they came out there in the third quarter and had, during that stretch, they had two 24-second violations in a row. Like, that's just
ridiculous.
Crazy. It's absolutely absurd. There was a whole possession where it was just Avery Bradley dribbling for 18 seconds against Markieff Morris, and then nothing materialized. It's just, it felt like they had kind of zero idea of what to do on defense because they weren't making the open shots. They had some open threes kind of initially, and then those went, like, didn't go down. They kind of felt like, well, what do we do now? Isaiah was going to the rim, and when he did, he didn't get foul calls. It just kind of felt like the Celtics then tried to just kind of dribble their way out of it, and we just saw them, Isaiah multiple times, we saw Smart do it, just kind of try to dribble between two defenders and just get it swiped. It was absurd. It was just kind of, I don't know. The Wizards have definitely done a better job of playing defense, and the Celtics have not shot that well, but it felt like in that third quarter they just didn't know what to do on offense, and they really had no options. But they had missed their threes, they had six turnovers, and then those two 24-second violations were just god-awful.
I don't understand how a team like, – that's when you know that there's some lack of focus. There's some – something is happening in their heads. How can you not get a shot off two straight possessions down? Like, that's,
to be fair on one of them, it was just they did get a shot off. It was just an air ball that was then Amir Johnson got the rebound and couldn't get back up in time. But still,
yeah,
to do that again on the next possession is terrible.
Right. I feel like we're just going to go back to what I said in the last podcast where they had the same lack of focus, that same big run, and it was the same type of thing. The past couple of games have been very much the same except flip the first and the third quarters where for some reason these guys, they're not anticipating – that the Wizards know what they want to do. And when you have a playoff series, I've said this multiple times on this show, we're at a point now where everybody knows what everybody is going to do. Everybody knows the sets. Everybody knows the tendencies. It's just a matter of who can just execute better. Who can be more crisp on defensive rotations? Who can look at what's happening and saying, oh, they're anticipating this pass. They know we like to do this. We got to do something different. That is a lot of what's happening. Guys like Bradley Beal and John Wall and I want to say maybe Otto Porter, anticipating passes, and really you might as well just go lay it in yourself for the Wizards. You might as well just go score for them yourself and save everybody the hassle if you're going to be throwing these lazy cross-court passes that everybody knows is coming now. They know that you want to run your offense this way, so stop running your offense exactly that way. Do something. People cut back door, fake a pass, do something different so you make them pay for anticipating. But I said it after game three. I'm saying it again after game four. They're not doing it. The Boston Celtics are not really doing that for an entire game. And when you look at this game, there was 6 minutes. 6 minutes of the worst basketball you're ever going to see, completely negated 38 minutes, 42 minutes. My math is terrible. Of even basketball. You know, they went on a 26-0 run. The Celtics ended up losing by 19. You throw out some of the garbage fourth quarter points that Gerald Green hit a few threes. But the difference in this game is simply that one run. The historically terrible run that if somebody had just gotten a handle on that, the rest of the game was even. So that's just on those guys on the floor. And now let me ask you this. Were you screaming for timeouts while it was going after Brad called one timeout and it just kept on going? Were you screaming for more timeouts?
No, I was more in silent despair at that point, just slowly accepting the fate that had bestowed itself upon us. So I don't even know what the timeouts would have done, because he called one after. Like, I understand, like, that's what you do to try and stop the momentum, but it's just, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't have, like, come out of the timeout and just immediately turn the ball over again. It didn't seem like that was going to jolt them into playing any better. And the weird thing is, in the first quarter, they were doing some of the stuff you describe of, like, going back door, or they had a lot of easy layups just at the rim. Al Horford was doing a great job passing when players would set pin downs and stuff for Isaiah and just go immediately to the rim. And since all the focus was on Isaiah, I think Kelly Olynyk had a hoop, Amir Johnson had one, Jay Crowder had one. They were doing some of that in the first quarter. It just felt like as they kind of got into the second quarter, players like Jay Crowder, Kelly Olynyk, Avery Bradley just like missed their open looks, and then it seemed like I didn't get the sense of this in the during the game, but after the game, Isaiah was talking about how the guys kind of were playing shook and kind of playing without the confidence that they were going to make a shot, and they had their heads down after missing a couple shots, and it's unfortunate because it's like they did generate some decent looks during that third quarter, but if you're not going to be able to like shoot them with confidence, they're never going to go in. So I just don't know how you kind of combat that run if you're just basically in those situations. It feels like the whole team's relying on Isaiah to get points, but if the Wizards are throwing three guys at Isaiah, there's really nothing he can do. So, I mean, other like the turnovers are obviously obnoxious, but there's got to be some better way to generate offense. And you're right, it's got to be something kind of different than what they're doing before. It felt like they had that going in the first quarter. But they really never went back to it. And at the end of the day, you just got to hopefully role players play better at home, and like, they'll shoot better percentages. Maybe we'll see a 3-point barrage like we saw in game one, but it's like starting to hit those shots that are open. They got some decent looks. I feel like that's how you start to turn the tide. That's how you make less turnovers. People like trying to do less by themselves, kind of relying in the team system. So I don't know. I don't know how you can explain just relatively good shooters just not performing well whatsoever when they play in the District of Columbia.
Yeah, I don't know. That's for some reason. I don't know. They just don't. It's been weird because every Celtics game in Washington this season has been a blowout. They've just been crushed in Washington. But they win at home. So, I mean, you can't just count on that. But, you know, you got home court for a reason, and you hold home court, and everything's going to be okay. And I said in our preview podcast, I think this goes seven, And I think everybody, each team wins all of their home games. So I know people out there love to overreact. After games one and two, people were going nuts and saying, oh, look, listen to them. They were calling us the worst number one seed ever, and now look how good we are. And then now I see a ton of tweets from similar people. Oh, trade everybody. Get rid of everybody. Jay Crowder sucks. He's a fraud. Al Horford, the Al Horford haters are out again. Whatever. Everybody needs to just chill out. There's disturbing trends that there definitely exist. But I think that the things that the Celtics need to do are very easy for them to do. And I think this follows a pattern from the entire season. When the Celtics have overly relied on Isaiah Thomas, we know they really rely on Isaiah Thomas, but when they are so focused on getting him his shots and everything else goes away, they're not good. Those fourth quarter scoring dominance, that, you know, performances that Isaiah Thomas pulls off, very often they are in the flow of an offense where other guys are doing things too. In the middle of the Isaiah 15-point fourth quarter, Horford's getting some shots, other guys are getting some shots, and it forces a defense to react to other players and pay attention to other players. Now, the Wizards, this is, now extrapolate that out to a whole game. The Wizards are paying a lot of attention to Isaiah Thomas. He said so. Everybody says so. Everybody knows it. We see it. Double teams, triple teams. Fine. If they want to spend time taking Isaiah Thomas out of the offense, fine. Let them do that for a few possessions. If they want to play 4-on-4, fine. You've got Al Horford out there. Run it through Al Horford. If they want to take Isaiah Thomas out of it, hell, Isaiah can go stand on the other side. I don't even care if he crosses half court. If you want to play 4-on-4, that's just more space. Make your cuts, set your picks, let Al Horford pass, put him in the post. Do think that if they want to play that game, that's fine. Take what the defense gives you. You've got really, really good players. Put Horford and three other shooters out there and dare them to give that much space. And see what happens. Because I guarantee you, the Celtics will score in those situations. But if they're just sitting there trying to look and find Isaiah, don't worry about Isaiah. If you're just looking to try and find him and give him the ball, then you're going to turn it over. Because you're not looking at the defense. You're not taking what the defense gives you. You're not reacting to what they're doing. You're just trying to force something. And everybody knows that you're forcing it. And then you turn the ball over. And John Wall is going nuts the other way. Faster than anybody. He's faster than the ball than most guys are without the ball. It's ridiculous. So I know I go, this is my version of a 26-0 run where I dominate the microphone for too long after a game. So I'll just say the Celtics need to just relax, read, react. And once they do that stuff, then you'll need Bradley Beal, who is shadowing Isaiah Thomas all over the court. They'll need Bradley Beal to help on other guys. And once he has to help, then Isaiah Thomas suddenly gets open shots. And Isaiah Thomas, we've seen what he can do with open shots. So don't force it. Just don't force it. It's going to come if you let it happen.
It felt like tonight they had like some glimmerings of that. They started to do that where they got a lot of open shots. It was Al Horford passing in the first quarter. And then we saw Isaiah be a bad man in transition. He opens the game 5-for-5 from three. It's just, it felt like they had like kind of the initial building blocks for a game like that. And then as soon as the shots stopped falling, it felt like in that second quarter, especially Isaiah was driving to the paint and they were moving the ball actually pretty well. It's just, they didn't knock down any shots. And then it's terrible from, terrible coming out of halftime. And it's as soon as this team gets like down a little bit within a game, I don't know. I was going to say, I was going to make a wild generalization about how they get, once they get down, they never come back, but that's exactly the opposite. But it feels like in this series, when you have this kind of history of runs to kind of to gut out that first quarter and then to have that happen in the third quarter, it kind of feels like it's just unattainable. Like there's no coming back from that. But it's I'm optimistic about the Celtics because, like we've said, the road team has not lost a game in this series whatsoever, including the regular season. But the Celtics' wins at home against the Wizards have been a lot closer, and they needed this kind of miracle performance in Game 2 from Isaiah Thomas, and they needed those crazy threes in Game 1. So it's not like they're the ones that completely blowing out the Wizards at home like the Wizards are doing to the Celtics. So this Game 5 is going to be extremely important because I don't think it's like a situation where the Wizards can't come in and win in Boston. I think the Celtics are likely to win, but they're going to have their role players step up, and they're going to need to have them to actually knock down some shots. But it's not like the home court's not everything. It's helpful. Kevin Pelton tweeted out a stat, a great ESPN reporter, is talking about how teams with plus 20 point differentials on the road in game who are tied 2-2 in a series have lost all of those series, which is a really obscure stat, but it gave me some hope moving forward. Because their home court advantage does matter, and I think it does just help your team kind of play better and like ride the energy of the crowd. But it's not like the Celtics have dominated in those early games. They are the ones who dominated some of the stretches in those games. I'm thinking about the third quarter of Game 1. So maybe it's just kind of that momentum will be there for them. But it's still going to be a tough game in Game 5, and they're going to have all these players step up because you can't have another down game from basically the entire roster other than Terry Rozier.
Yeah, here's one thing to keep in mind, and I know how it sounds, but it doesn't matter if you lose by 100 or by 1. A loss is a loss, a win is a win, and the Wizards didn't get any extra points, any extra wins in this series by going on a 26-0 run tonight. The Celtics didn't get anything extra when Isaiah scored 53 and made that huge comeback. The series is tied at 2. And going back to Boston, it's a brand new series. The momentum, there's no momentum that carries from game to game. That's done. That doesn't exist. Okay, it's a fictional thing. It doesn't exist. So, Game 5 is a brand new game. Now the trends exist. The things that the Celtics are doing wrong consistently exist, and they have to fix those things. But it's not a matter of, well, that 26-0 run on Thursday, really, you know, that I'm still thinking about that. No one's thinking about that when it comes to the next day. So when it comes to Game 5, we need a few players here to really step up. Like, I don't know what's going on with Marcus Smart. And I saw a tweet from Mike Dinan, who's watching the Comcast Sportsnet halftime, who said Tommy Heinsohn was talking about Marcus Smart being about 15 pounds overweight, and then Jared Weiss replied and said, yeah, that's kind of been a thing for a little while now. And I've not heard this as a thing. Have you?
I've heard rumblings about Marcus Smart's weight. I heard some like last off season, but that's about it. But nothing. I definitely haven't heard anything this season. But it's not completely out of nowhere.
And it's funny because Marcus Smart can do so many good things, but he's not the biggest problem. But he has stretches where in the middle of all of this craziness, like he seems to be in the middle of these big Wizards runs that he's not playing with the same confidence or what. I don't know what the word is. I don't know. Intensity? That's not the right word either, because Marcus Smart is always super intense. But there's something that's not there with Marcus Smart. Not the guy that when I saw him play backup point guard like when we're watching Isaiah Thomas off the ball and Marcus Smart bringing it up, that should be a good thing, but it hasn't necessarily been a good thing. And the other guy is Jay Crowder, who I don't know what's going on with him either, but he was terrible tonight. I mean, he was really, really, really bad. And I think it was highlighted on a Jan Mahimi pass to Bradley Beal for a dunk. Crowder looked as lost on that play as I've ever seen him, where the shot, let me see if I can recount this. Beal missed the shot, I want to say. Mahimi got the rebound. Somebody somehow, Crowder got twisted and spun around, and he just lost Beal and was way out of position. And Mahimi made a nice little pass, and Beal got that dunk. And I'm just thinking that the real Jay Crowder wouldn't make that play. That's just a horrible play out of Crowder. He missed all of his threes. He's taking these crazy little step back threes. He seems lost. And for a guy that had four steals and seven rebounds, just I feel like, I don't know. I just feel like that we're not watching the Jay Crowder that was around for the regular season and Marcus Smart.
Crowder's not shooting the ball with any confidence, which is kind of absurd because it's the same guy who made six threes in game one. I remember the play you're talking about, and he definitely got lost after the offensive rebound because he didn't stick to Beal whatsoever. I thought he was a pretty good on the weak side defense, which is kind of normally his thing, and he did end up with four steals. Smart, I feel like we spent probably 40% of the Raining Jays talking about Marcus Smart, and he's sometimes good and he's sometimes awful. I'll never understand him. I don't get the weight thing. I don't watch him play right now and be like, man, that guy, if he was 10 pounds lighter, he'd be having totally different results. It totally feels like a mental thing for Marcus Smart, and I'm not sure exactly how you fix that, but hopefully going back to the Garden, maybe we'll get some positive mindset in there. The thing I wanted to talk about was Avery Bradley. Jay King, the other Reigning Jay, reported that now he has a hip pointer on his other hip. Yeah. And he was, messing around with that during the game and kind of looked uncomfortable. It seems like Avery Bradley gets hurt every single playoffs, but it's just, I thought he was doing a really good job on John Wall early in the game on defense, but his jump shot's also not there. We saw him he's definitely one of the guys who kind of looked shook as well after he was 2 for 9 from tonight. He hit his 1-3 very early in the game, but after that, it just looked like he was not willing to shoot. So I don't know what the answer is to kind of solve these three guys' problems, but it's hopefully just kind of going back to Boston is the solution. The one thing I think they're like, I know once the 26-0 run happens, there's not a lot of good things to take away from this game, but I thought the Celtics in the first quarter and generally in the first half were playing very good half-court defense on the Wizards. I thought they did a great job of limiting John Wall. He started the game 0-for-9. It's just that once their kind of offense sputtered and you see the Wizards get out in transition, they really get things going. But if the Celtics can at all just score consistently for an entire game, it feels like they should have the advantage just in playing just a half-court v. half-court game. But once they let the Wizards out in transition, it feels like it's completely lost. But I thought they had some very good moments, especially in that first quarter, whereas maybe it was just because it wasn't a first quarter like the first three games in the series, but it was just, I thought they played very well, just limiting what the Wizards could do on offense. They had a lot of steals. They felt like the Wizards actually had more turnovers in this game than the Celtics did, which is a shocking stat. But I thought the Celtics were playing like swarming defense in the first and second quarters. And I thought a lot of that was that the Wizards were kind of unable to do anything in the half court. So I think the answer is this: the Celtics need to make every single one of their shots.
Yeah, there you go.
Not let the Wizards get in transition. I think it's an easy fix.
It's very simple. It's funny because after the game, Brad Stevens said, when you turn the ball over against the Wizards, you'd prefer to have the guys just drop kick the ball into the stands than give them the opportunity to get out in transition, which is where the Celtics just got demolished. You can't let John Wall get out there, run, and spin you around. He's really good at changing directions laterally and just gets you spinning, and then he gets the fouls, and that's how he gets going. So I think the second quarter, I don't want to say that's where the game was lost, but there was a huge missed opportunity in that second quarter where the Celtics had a lead. They were up to 10.
They were at least up 30-20 at the start of that second quarter. It was after Isaiah hit his fifth three.
Yeah. And they lost that second quarter, and they had a bunch of opportunities there. Olynyk was 0 of 3 from 3. Smart missed a couple in that second quarter. Crowder missed one. So you have Olynyk, Smart, and Crowder all going 0 for 6 from 3. That was, I think, a chance for the Celtics to kind of change the face of this game. And who knows what happens in the third quarter. If they had hit a three, one of those threes in there, if, you know, Crowder, I don't know, it was his only one that he took, but if Olynyk had hit one or two of those threes and pushed that lead up a little bit, who knows what happens there. And yeah, the game was lost in that third quarter, but I would be interested to see what would happen if that second quarter where the Celtics didn't shoot particularly well, if they had hit a few of those shots, then how things would have changed. Wall had a huge second quarter. He had 14 points, and that's when he got going. That's when he got hot. So,
well, it directly coincided with it was like that final 7 minutes of that second quarter where the Celtics only scored 8 points and Wall had 14. It's like, it's no wonder that when he was able to get on the rebounds and get out in transition where he really like got going. And you're right. If they start knocking down those threes, then it's a totally different story. I remember the Crowder three on that. He missed a wide open three in the corner and was late getting back, and it immediately led to an Otto Porter and 1 3-point play. That's kind of the microcosm of the entire night, is a missed wide open three from the Celtics leading to points in transition for the Washington Wizards. And then they just kind of further shat the bed in the third quarter. It's like they shat the bed once and then decided to go back for more in the third quarter.
Bad, bad. Okay. But, you know, look, game five, they got a couple days off. So they've got Monday, Tuesday off, Wednesday, they're at home. They got a couple of days off to kind of recover. Maybe Avery Bradley can kind of work through that hip pointer pain. And so we'll see about that.
Fall has arrived at JCPenney, the perfect time to refresh your home. From now until Sunday, get up to 50% off select comforter sets, furniture, and the most comfortable mattresses from top brands like Tempur-Pedic, Sealy, Beautyrest, and more. And save 50 to 60% on select sheet sets, plus an extra 15% with your coupon on select home items. Hurry, end soon. That's getting your pennies worth. JCPenney. Coupon valid 9/28 to 10/9 on select home items, furniture, and mattresses. Prices valid 9/28 to 10/1. Selections vary by store while supplies last. Fittings on regular and original prices. Intermediate markdowns may have been taken. Some exclusions apply. See store or jcp.com for details.
Let me get to some tweets before we go into Jam's junk drawer. Michael Nye at MP9. What's with all those scoreless runs the Seas keep going on? You know, it's just funny to me that they somehow lose their focus. They just look so bad. They can look so good all for most of the game, and then all of a sudden for 6 minute stretches, they just look like they've never played the game before. Mike Dinan, who says, this is my OG take and I'm sticking to it. He says, the Celtics can still win this series if they model the 1960 Pittsburgh Pirates. This is such a Mike Dinan tweet. World Series, the Yankees won 3 games, 16-3, 10-0, and 12-0, but the Pirates took game 7. It goes along with my point earlier. If it doesn't matter what the point spread is, Celtics could have gone scoreless in this game and lost 200-0, and it still counts as one game. So, you know, that's
didn't they need a walk-off home run in game 7 from Bill Mazeroski, if I'm getting my baseball history correct?
I don't know at all.
Mike Dynan, not... you better tweet at me if I'm correct.
That would be amazing. I'm not a baseball historian at all, so I don't know. Josh Hollingsworth at JD Hollings. Are these the games that everyone wishes Brad Stevens wasn't so calm and collected? It's interesting. I think this is definitely part of the Brad Stevens evolution. I don't know what he's going to be as the final version of him as an NBA head coach. I think I would like every once in a while in a huddle when they go to him mic'd up to just have him just bleep the hell out of it. Just go completely nuts. But that's not necessarily, I don't know, that might not be productive. Maybe that's just not how the team responds. They have said he's gone into the locker room and tore them new ones. Just, we don't see it. We don't see it. So, but, you know, you see him after the game. He's, you know, pretty sarcastic sometimes after games. And he knows he can make pointed comments. But I would like to see him get a little more fired up.
It feels like Angry Brad definitely exists. He's definitely emerged. But he's very private about it. He's not going to publicly air out his guys. So I don't know if it's – I feel like it's hard to expect him to do that. But I think he's definitely been more willing to show his frustration with the team this year. So I don't know. I think it's just – it's more of a cathartic thing. Like you want him to be as visibly angry as all the fans are. But I don't know. I'm not going to question Brad Stevens' kind of – mindset and approach, because it feels like he's done a pretty good job so far.
Right. That's more fans. Yeah, fans go crazy and they want the coach to kind of mirror what they're doing. So that's fine. Last tweet and the last discussion point before Jam's Junk Drawer comes from Daniel Hogan at Hogs 111. If Rozier isn't in the starting lineup for Game 5, I'll be upset. What do you guys think? Brad Stevens said after the game that he's got changes in mind. He's going to go watch the film and whatnot. I know he went back to Amir in this game. He said that gives them the best chance to be the best version of themselves. I just don't see it. I don't see Amir Johnson being productive in this series. Aside from that quick stretch, which kind of shut us all up for a short time, he's not been very good. And so I think Brad Stevens going to go with somebody else. And if it's not Rozier, it may be going back to Gerald, but I don't like that. I want a defensive presence. I want somebody who can play some defense or make some sort of difference on the perimeter. So it's either Smart or it's Rozier or, yeah, I think basically – those are the choices. Or I know you're a proponent of starting Kelly Olynyk too.
Yeah, Brad said after the game that the Wizards' length was one of the big things that kind of had a huge impact on this game and was the ability of them to play defense. And he said the Celtics have to use spacing to take their length out of play and kind of open up the driving lane. So it just makes sense that you put a three-point shooter out on the perimeter. I think it could be anyone. I had a dumb tweet after the game. I said, start Tito or start Jalen or start Kelly. Just like someone who can shoot, who's like can make an impact. I don't think like it's obviously not going to be like the long term like 5-man unit that they use in crunch time. But you just got to have to go with someone that doesn't clog the lane and can shoot and then also not be atrocious on defense. So like that rules out Gerald. So all three of those players can be productive. We've seen Rozier be very productive. So sure, start Tito, start Kelly, start someone, just get a shooter in there. Like something's got to change.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's Jarebko. Like it's somebody's got to get in there and do something. I agree. I agree.
There's many factions of Celtics Twitter who have been on the start Jarebko bandwagon for months now. I'm looking right at you, Sam Sheehan. I'm fine with it. It's just got to be someone out there who can space the floor and play with some energy. It's just, it doesn't seem that difficult, but it's something's got to change, and Gerald Green is not the solution.
Yeah, I think you need another shooter out there. You need another shooter, but you need, like we've been saying, you need somebody that can be productive on the other end too. You need to space the floor. You need to get Isaiah Thomas going somehow. You need to create those lanes. So we'll see what the starting lineup is going to be. Brad Stevens may not reveal that until Wednesday, but it can't be Amir Johnson. It just can't. It cannot be Amir Johnson. I'm sorry. I love the big dog too, but it can't be him.
I'm sure the big dog would volunteer and say, "Hey, look, take me out of this game," because he's all about winning, and he knows. Like, I'm sure he's fine with that.
Yeah. No. Right. Of course.
Before we get to the junk drawer, I wanted to ask you what you thought about Isaiah complaining and kind of bitching about the refs after the game.
I think that's very much like a. Like when Phil Jackson would do it. I think that's one of those things that he doesn't like the way he's being handled. So he's going to invest $15,000 in a fine to make sure that the referees are aware that he's being held. And that's been going on in the Bulls series. And if they're going to allow a guy to be flat out held, now, I understand playoff basketball, but you can't just hug a guy and have that be okay. That's a foul. And you can't play 82 games under one set of rules and then have another set of rules as you try to get towards the NBA championship. You could play a little bit looser with the interpretations. You can let a little bit more contact go, but you can't just hug guys. So if he wants to go out there, he was very clear, I think, about not blaming the refs for the loss. Like, he was very open. And I think, as Jay King likes to say, that Isaiah is one of those rare guys that's kind of honest when he's out there talking. I think the most important thing that he said was about the guys hanging their heads, like we talked about earlier. I think the referee thing was, I got to start getting some calls. And he's right. How can Isaiah Thomas go a whole game playing that many minutes without a single free throw attempt? And it's not like he shied away from the contact. It's not like he didn't get into the lane. There's got to be some level of foul call when it comes to that. And on top of everything, it's not just about Isaiah. If you start calling some of those fouls earlier, if you're not going to let them bear hug Isaiah, you start calling some of those fouls, it gets the Celtics into the penalty sooner, and they have an opportunity to score points from the line rather than try to manufacture some sort of offense. And that gives you an opportunity, depending on the timing of it. If you know the Celtics are going to get to the line and they're in the penalty early, you can sit down in Isaiah Thomas for a little bit of that stretch and just run an offense and try to force the issue, and you can score points from the line, stop the clock, let Isaiah rest, without missing a ton of minutes, and you can score points without needing to have some guy create his own shot. So there's a multi-layered effect there. And I think that if you're Isaiah Thomas and you're a star player, you want to make sure that it's known, you get it out there in the public, then sure, go for it. He'll get a fine, but like I said before, I think it's an investment.
Oh yeah. And the good thing is he's consistent because, he was definitely lobbying those complaints during the game. That's why he picked up a tech during during free throws for Bradley Beal. It's kind of a double-edged sword, because anything that they're doing to Isaiah Thomas, I can guarantee you Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart are doing to Bradley Beal right now. So it's sure. But I think actually more calls will favor the Celtics. Just kind of along the theme we've been talking about, is that if you slow down the game and play less of a wild, fast-paced game in transition, that benefits the Celtics just because there's less John Wall being amazing. So I think if the more whistles, as frustrating as they are, because I really think that the refs kind of let them play tonight on both ends of the court. I think there were some times that John Wall could have been called, and he could have gotten to the line more, but I think it really benefits the Celtics and Isaiah Thomas to kind of have a more whistle heavy game. I wouldn't, like, as a basketball purist, that's not my ideal form of basketball, but I think it's, as someone who wants to see the Celtics win, yeah, I think that would be beneficial. It's just more calls in general, just kind of let people play in space more. So I have no problem with Isaiah doing it. He's doing it. It's just a good strategic move to try and win the game. And if he's willing to pay a fine for it, all good for him, you know?
Sure. Absolutely. All right. Let's do this. The Jams junk drawer. I feel like this is the old, this should be like the old Ravishing Rick Rude. You're not the wrestling guy, right? You don't like wrestling.
No. It's a soap opera for adult men.
Yes. But it's for those of you who do remember the old Ravishing Rick Rude routine where he'd come in and he was the best, man. He was the best heel because he would just talk down to all the guys in the audience and just talk about how much their wives and girlfriends wanted to be with him instead of the guys that they were there with. And then we'd say, hit the music. And he would do like this, like little dance thing. It was hilarious, but you don't get the reference. So it's completely lost on you. Regardless.
I can still yell out, hit the music.
Yeah, there we go.
All right, the Jams junk drawer, maybe it's a little shorter tonight because after that 26-0 run, I just got frustrated and stopped taking notes. But to start off, villainous Kelly Olynyk getting booed and then going in for that monster slam has got to be the most entertaining thing I've seen, at least tonight. Just like, he's so just dorky and such a doofus. They just like having the entire crowd boo him and then have him throw that back down in their face with a dunk was amazing. If only he could have made any of those open threes and shut up the fans of Washington, that would have been perfect.
I would have loved it.
Going in more on Olynyk, there was that one play in the second quarter where he got called, or he had the ball and Jan Mahimi got called for a trip. And I got to give a shout out to Snotty Drippin, Celtics fan out there, who said, quotes, you guys see Olynyk dive at Mahimi's legs? I thought that was perfect given the whole narrative that Kelly Olynyk is the dirtiest player in the league. Let's move on. Brandon Jennings is just a dog shit basketball player. He's not very good. That was my one takeaway. Nothing he does is productive.
He's terrible.
There was one point where the Celtics had an amazing defensive possession for 23 and a half seconds, and Jan Mahinimi was barreling down to the rim, but he was still at the foul line, and of course Marcus Smart just bowled him out with the dumb foul with like less than a fraction of a second left on the shot clock, and I just thought that was perfectly Marcus.
Very Marcus. It's a very Marcus thing to do.
All right, one point in the second quarter, I believe, Isaiah Thomas tried to pass the ball to Kelly Olynyk for a three, but he threw him like a four or five bounce pass. Like, it was just like rolling on the floor to him, and it's just, I don't know. I'm not like the best basketball player, but I know it helps to kind of catch the ball in rhythm, and it was no surprise that Olynyk clanked that one off the back rim after getting six bounces before his bounce pass. Basically, he just rolled to him. It was absurd.
I don't remember that part.
I'd say I had some weird passes out of the paint tonight. They weren't the crispest of passes. Otto Porter, every time he falls, he pretends to be hurt. It's frustrating to me. I know I said this after game two when he started coughing up a bunch of blood, but at this point, it's infuriating. He plays up every time he's hurt. Deal with it, Otto Porter. At halftime, apparently Jason Smith and Isaiah Thomas had some words for each other. Who the hell is Jason Smith to engage in any sort of verbal conflict with Isaiah Thomas? That feels absurd. And then this is where it kind of fell off. I had to go to another game. DeMar DeRozan said, after getting swept, if we had LeBron on our team, we would have won.
Yeah. There you go.
DeMar. And then the final one, it was like 1 minute left and they're doing like a sad pan across the Celtics bench, and my girlfriend just looks over to me and she says, why did Kelly's nails look so nice? And I was just kind of left speechless and realized, you know what, this is a silly game of grown men we're watching and getting very upset over. And then my girlfriend just comes in with a completely innocuous comment. It's like, yep, this is what we do. Uh-huh. We watch these grown men play a silly game.
That's pretty funny. I've never noticed Kelly Olynyk's nails. So focused on his hair.
And his ugly, ugly beard.
That's a terrible beard. I don't know why he doesn't shave. I wanted to mention one thing. I want to throw one thing into the junk drawer. Isaiah Thomas, when he had a steal, he had a picked off a pass and was out on the break in the second quarter. This is when the game was going good, and he made this really awesome play where he kind of slowed down. John Wall was trying to track him down for the chase down block, and he did this thing where he slowed down and kind of bumped into Wall, and then took off again and laid it in and just made sure that Wall had no momentum and wasn't able to get the block, and he laid it in. And it's just a really amazing example of how Isaiah Thomas uses his body to his advantage and how smart he is. Because some guys would just really just try to run really fast and go and do something. Obviously, I think most guys would try to dunk it, but Isaiah is not going to dunk it in that situation, or maybe any situation anymore. But I thought it was a really great example of how smart he is and how he uses his body to do what he needs to on the floor. That's my one contribution.
It's something Terry Rozier could watch some film of, as someone who just missed a number of dunks tonight out in transition. But you're right. No, his ability to kind of slow down like that and then still go up with the layup is damn impressive.
All right. Nice. I like ending on the junk drawer. It's a nice little happy, upbeat type of thing on what is a downbeat kind of day. Celtics lose 121-102, a blowout that happened over the course of 6 minutes in the third quarter. Now we're off to game five, a critical game five. To me, I say the winner of game five Wednesday night is the winner of this series, because if the Wizards go and win in Boston, forget it. The Celtics can't win in Washington. And if the Celtics hold home court, then they've got two opportunities to win it. And then I don't know what happens in game six, but I think the Celtics can win a game seven. So we'll see how that goes. Hopefully it goes well. And hopefully you are a subscriber and you will rate us 5 stars and give us a nice review and continue our rise in the rankings. If you are not a subscriber, please subscribe to us. And, you know, it's a fun thing. You get the show every day, 5 days a week, because that's how often we do it. Sometimes 6, maybe every once in a while 4. But our average is like 5, for sure. That's what we're hitting on the average. So we'll be around, you know, depending on how the playoffs go. Our needs are your needs, and we'll pump out shows as needed. That's it, everybody. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Celtics Podcast. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
King and John Corrales.